We're doing Pirkei Avot, and we had said last time that we have to explore the Mishnah that says that a person should exile himself to a place of Torah, and I'm deferring that discussion for Thursday night, Bezrat Hashem. For now, we're going to move on to Mishnah Tetvav. Rabbi Yana Yomir. Rabbi Yana, he says, Ein biyadeinu, we don't have, which can mean we don't understand or we don't have a grasp. Lo mishalvat arsha'im ve'af lo meyisurei atzadikim. Many interpretations to the Mishnah, we'll choose one of them, and that is that we can't understand why the wicked have it good and why the righteous suffer. You have a whole book of Job, you have a book of Habakkuk, you have Psukim in the Torah. Bottom line, says Rabbi Yanai, we don't understand. Now, we have a long class towards the end of the book of Iyov discussing this concept of we don't understand. I wouldn't take that so simply. But the Mishnah firstly tells us we don't understand. So you live with that, you don't understand. Rabbi Yanai says we don't understand. And he doesn't say I don't understand, he says we don't understand. And we can live with that. We can come to terms with that. How can we come to terms with that? So for that, I invite you to visit the final classes of the Book of Iyov, where we discuss that. Maybe we'll borrow a few concepts, just not to leave you in complete suspense, but you, in order to understand them better, you should listen to those classes. one concept we discussed there is the world to come, that the world is not finite. And that the world can be viewed as a drop in the bucket compared to the greater world that's still waiting. Another concept we discussed is that if you had clarity, and that's what Iyov says at the end of the book, if he says, once I have clarity that God's running the show, then I can contend with the fact that I don't understand. My hardship in dealing with the fact that I didn't understand was the fact that I also never had God talk to me until now. And so until now, the difficulties I faced with the world were playing themselves out against the backdrop of a relationship with God where, at the end of the day, I never spoke to Him. It was all things I had heard. But now that God talks to me and I understand He's following and He knows what's going on in the world, so then the fact that I don't understand Him is something I can deal with. And that's at the root of dealing with the hardships of, I don't understand. You don't understand, but if you can realize that He does, there is a master plan, so then the fact that you don't understand is something you could live with. It's not easy, but you could. And the fact that Rabbi Yanai tells you you don't understand, that we don't understand, to an extent makes it easier, because then you don't have to keep searching. You have to come to terms with the fact that you don't understand, but it's legitimate that you don't understand. Sometimes people kill themselves because they say, but I don't understand. How does this apply to the Jewish home? Very simply. Years ago, I wasn't even dating. I still have this friend. I had a friend at the time as well, who was old enough to be my father. He was already marrying off children at the time. And we were once talking, I don't even remember how this came up, and he said to me, husbands don't really know their wives. So I said, what do you mean? You think you don't know your wife? You're married 25, 35, I don't know how many years, what do you mean you don't really know your wife? He says, every human being is intricate and complex. And you have to realize that your knowledge of your spouse is only up to a certain point. And even if you think you can gauge why or what your spouse did, you only see it up to a certain level. And as much as two people can be close, at the end of the day, they are two individuals. And there are limits to how well we can know one another. There's a Yiddish saying that says, if you boast about your child's brilliance and your husband's love and try to show it off, you will invariably be disappointed. We think, you know, a wife says, I'll just ask him and he'll tell you, but he won't give you the response you want him to give. He's not a puppet. And we can build a tremendous relationship. We also have to realize that we still remain two individuals. And our knowledge of one another, as deep as it goes, does not cross the folds of two individuals. And we have to respect that. Just like Rabbi Yannai says, respect that you don't understand God. You cannot fit God into a little box and say he's going to work the way I say, and I know how he's going to play these things out. You don't know. By the same token, you don't understand your spouse completely. You can love your spouse, you can have a great relationship with your spouse, you can build with your spouse, and you can have tremendous understanding on many levels. But at the end of the day, you're still two people. And a person has to learn to respect that they don't completely understand the other person. We are still two people. A husband once came to me, and he said, I'm talking to you, and you're the first person I'm talking to. I haven't said a word about this to anyone, but I don't know what to do. So that's a scary sentence, okay? What's the problem? He says, my wife is becoming more and more lazy, and I'm not sure what to do about it. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, in the last few weeks, every day, it's become more and more severe. It reached a point where I was sitting at one end of the table, she was sitting at the other end of the table, and on the counter there was a bottle of milk, and she said, could you get that for me? So, okay, I got up and I got a bottle of milk, but, you know, you wonder, she's the same distance as I am from the bottle of milk. Why is she asking me to get up and get her the bottle of milk? He said, you know, little things, but you start looking at it and you say, wait a second, what's going on here? Fair? Yeah? Fair question. He's describing how slowly but surely she's asking him to do more and more and more, and he's just wondering what's going on. So, you know, I'm a simple guy. I say, well, if you have a situation where things are comfortable and calm and good, is there a way to ask her? Is there a way to, you know, just discuss a little bit? Don't ask her. Don't come across and say, you know, you're asking me for a million things that you never used to and what's going on. But I said, you know, I would suggest first hold off for another week. See what happens. Usually we overreact. When things happen, we tend to first ask or question. First be a good, faithful husband. Carry on another week. If in another week you don't get an insight into what's going on, so then find one example and try to ask and see what's going on. A week later he comes back and he says, I had to tell you. I didn't bring it up. I never asked. But when I realized what was going on, I didn't want you to think that my wife was some lazy bum. So I just had to tell you. So I said, you don't have to tell me. I don't think your wife's a lazy bum. He says, no, I want you to know. Okay, fine. What's going on? His wife had some kind of physical ailment. I don't know exactly what it was. And movements became more and more and more painful for her. And she didn't want to bother him. She wasn't telling him. But a byproduct of it was that it hurt her to move. So she would ask him, you know, could you pass me that? Could you this, that? She wasn't sharing with him the greater pain she was having. She wasn't telling him everything else that was going on. But she was asking him here and there, you know, simple things to pass her. Well, he felt like a total dunce. Here she was doing 85% of what she had done until now and not even complaining, not saying a word. But she didn't want to burden him with how badly she felt. And he's wondering, why did she ask me to get up and pass her the milk? We don't understand one another. And even when we have an open relationship, and even when we have a close relationship, there are still going to be levels that just we don't get to. And we have to realize our limitations and be prepared to judge favorably. Maybe we'll add one more story, and then we'll have to save the rest of the Mishnah next week. This is most poignant when people first get married. Aside from the difference that he's a boy and she's a girl, there are differences because we come from different places. So there was once a young couple that was newly married, and like all good newlywed couples, they would try to go to sleep together. Chazal say the cherished time between a couple is when they're both going to sleep. The Talmud says when they're prohibited. Not necessarily when they're allowed to touch. When the beds are separate and they're not allowed to touch, but they're going to sleep together and they could talk, the Talmud says that's Beit Tanugah. That's the Talmud quotes from the Navi. That's the wife's house of pleasures, so to speak. The wife enjoys those intimate moments as they're falling asleep and chatting in bed. So the Talmud says, the Talmud curses a person who barges in on that. Who says, you know, I got no place to sleep tonight. Could I sleep by you guys? And the couple say, you know, we have a studio apartment. Maybe you can find somewhere else. And he says, I don't mind. So the Talmud says, cursed is the person who does that. Because if he could find another option and instead he's sleeping there, and because of that, she won't be able to have those few minutes of intimate conversation with her husband, so cursed is the person who takes that away from a woman. That's what the Talmud says. Neshe amiti garashun mi beit tanugah. The Talmud says there's a guy like that. Go put in a little more effort. Go take up another option. So at any rate, this couple ordinarily goes to sleep together. And one night she tells her husband, you know, I have a lot of tests coming up. I have to stay up late studying. Don't wait up for me. Go to sleep. And we'll meet tomorrow. Fine. Wishes her good night. They part on happy terms. He goes to sleep. She continues working. 2 hours later, it's 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And she's talking to her friend, who's also preparing for all these tests, and she walks into the room, talking at the top of her lungs. And he wakes up, and he's very startled. And she looks at him, she says, I woke you, oh, I'm so sorry, go back to sleep. Shh, I'm sorry. Shh. He's looking at her. She just walked in here yelling, what do you mean, now suddenly, shh. Okay, fine, no problem, honey. Goes back to sleep. He's wondering, you know, okay, maybe she forgot I'm sleeping here. She goes out, she continues working, okay, nothing doing, fine. A few more weeks pass, again she has more tests, again they agree, he'll go to sleep, she's going to continue working, and she, in order to stay awake as she's studying, she puts up a cup of coffee and she decides she needs some music. She turns on the music full blast, and he gets up, and she looks, and he's up. Oh, this woke you. I'm so sorry. Shh. Back to sleep. She goes, she turns down the volume. Shh. Okay, you know, I was thinking, you know, she knew I was here, you know. This is the second time already, so, okay, you know. He tosses, he turns, and it's already starting to bug him, you know. Fine. Falls back asleep. A few weeks later, same story. And he goes to sleep. She continues working. She walks into the room. She's talking at the top of her lungs. And she's laughing. And it's such a funny joke. And he's lying there. And he's like, He sits up. And he looks at her. She's like, oh, you were sleeping. Right. So he looks at her and he goes, So she looks at him and she goes, you're upsetting me, aren't you? So he looks at her and he's like, I don't understand. And she turns around and she says, I know, I'm a terrible person. She walks out of the room. He looks at her and he says, you're upset? What are you upset? You just woke me. What did I say? She's all upset. Now he can't talk to her. He looks at her, she looks at him, she goes to work, he's sitting there and he's scratching his head. What does she want from his life? So the truth is we're out of time, but if you want, we'll finish the story. Finish the story? Okay. So we can make this long or we can make this short. We'll make it short, and at a different time we'll fill in the other parts of the story. In a nutshell, just because I believe in ending on time, so in a nutshell, he looks at her and he says, I don't understand. You knew I was sleeping there. It's not the first time. It's not the second time. And every time you shh, but you know, what do you want from my life? I don't understand. You wake me, you destroy my night's sleep. And, don't you care? She says, of course I care. I'm very sorry. He says, you're so sorry. So then why did you do it? She says, I forgot. What do you mean you forgot? I'm sleeping here. How do you forget? What's the backdrop to the scene? It took them a long time to figure it out. Because in general, couples have a hard time realizing what their difference of approach is and where it stems from. But the real backdrop to the scene, after months, I'm taking you fast forward to months of conversation, and that's what I'm skipping here. There's a lot to be learned from the whole process until they got there. But at the end of the story, when we fast forward, she came from a family where she was with 15 siblings, and her parents had a two-room apartment. So they grew up that, you know, you couldn't be quiet because they were living in a two-room apartment. The parents had their bedroom, and the other room was the kitchen and the living room and the dining room and the kids' bedroom all in one. She came from a poor family. That's what they lived in. So all the kids slept, you know, around the dining room table, and other kids spoke on the phone, and everyone lived happily together, and then, yeah, you made noise, and everyone got used to sleeping with noise, and that was their norm. He came from a family where he was an only child in a three-floor house. When he went to sleep, they wouldn't even walk on that floor. You know, silence. He's sleeping. Why? They could afford it. Why not? So he comes into the marriage, and then he's going to sleep. And the least he could expect, the norm in his perspective is, if I'm sleeping in the room, you don't walk in talking at the top of your lungs. And when they reached this bottom line, she reminded him. She said, "Don't you remember when we'd be dating and we'd talk on the phone and you'd ask me, aren't there kids sleeping all around you? And I'd say, don't worry, they're not getting up from it. And you can never understand it." Right, he could never understand it. Because the world he came from was a world where he had a whole floor to himself when he went to sleep. The world she came from, everyone lived together and made noise and was used to it. So coming back to our Mishnah, the Mishnah says we don't understand God. We can't fit God into a box. We can't say, I know why he does A, B, or C. We don't understand. That's what Rabbi Yannai tells us. Well, the same thing applies within a marriage. We have to realize that as good as our relationship is, this is far sharper in the beginning of the relationship, but as the relationship continues, this remains true. We don't understand their spouse completely. We can understand up to a point, and we have to realize our limitations and respect that, and therefore give a lot of room for that black box called I don't know. So there are things going on here that I don't know. And the truth is, there's a lot more to be said on this Mishnah, but we're out of time, so to be continued next week, Bezrat Hashem.